Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Traveler's Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us on the broadcast today. Well, I think a lot of people in our listening audience are familiar with the event that took place recently at a zoo. And at that particular zoo, what happened was a little boy had fallen into, a three-year-old boy, had fallen into part of the gorilla exhibit at the zoo. And after a period of time, a decision was made to go ahead and to shoot the gorilla and kill the gorilla. And so now we're seeing with that event a lot of discussion going on about whether it was right for them to kill the gorilla. And there's other different nuance of the discussion in different areas. Some, you know, talking about the responsibility of the zoo that they have in this whole incident. Some are going, you know, talking about the parents and not watching their children very well, these types of things. But part that I wanted to zero in on is I just wanted to zero in on some of the language that is being used in this discussion that seems to be glorifying gorillas. It seems to be making some sort of a moral equivalence between the boy and the gorilla. And in some cases, the gorilla is actually looked upon in a greater moral value than the boy in this case, because the gorilla was rare, silverback gorilla, I guess, and very rare in the world today. And so some people seem to be at least implying that there was a greater value to the gorilla that was there than the boy. Well, let me read from Denny Burke. Denny had written a little bit on this out at dennyburke.com. And the title of it says this: "The zoo was right to kill the gorilla to protect the boy." He starts by saying there's a scene in the movie Man of Steel where Clark Kent's dad sacrifices his life to save a dog. It's very dramatic, and it's portrayed as heroic. But despite all the pathos and drama, there's nothing heroic about treating a dog's life as the moral equivalent of human life. In fact, it's an evidence of a pagan decadence to think like that, which is why that scene made sense to American moviegoers in 2013, but would have made no sense to Americans in previous generations. Denny begins the article then just talking about that there's something, for some reason, something has changed in the way that we consider the value of human life when it's compared with the value of animal life. So much so that it could appear in a motion picture, you know, a main, a box office success story here, right, of the Man of Steel and so forth, a blockbuster film, and nobody would really question, you know, the whether or not this would be should be heroic that someone would give their life for a dog, for a dog's life. I think one of the things in that opening part of this passage, this opening part of this, the paragraph here that Denny wrote in the opening part of his article, it speaks to the idea of the influence, I think, that Darwinian philosophy has had upon our culture today, where we see that almost subcultural or subconscious changes that have taken place. Maybe they're not so subverted, and maybe a little bit more overt. We see here that people think this way about animals versus human. humans. He goes on here in the article then to say this: I thought about that scene today when I saw the headlines about the boy that recently got trapped in the gorilla enclosure. The long and short of the story goes like this. A three-year-old boy climbed into the enclosure through an inadequate barrier. A 450-pound gorilla traps the boy and violently manhandles him. Knowing that tranquilizer darts will work too slowly, zookeepers decided to kill the gorilla in order to save the boy. And that is what they did. And the boy is alive and well now. Right call, right? Not so fast. Here are the headlines that I have seen today. Headlines, he lists about six of them, I guess it is here. And the first one says this. It says, this is from today.com. It says, killing of gorilla to save boy sparks outrage. A second one, this one's from NBC News. It says, gorilla seemed to protect child in enclosure, according to a witness. The third one that's listed here, and this is out of, not quite sure where this one is coming from. I think it's an online service, but it says, the killing of the Cincinnati Zoo gorilla results in outrage among animal rights supporters. There's another one that he lists here as well, and this one says, police could prosecute the boy's parents for gorilla's death. Another one says, was the decision to kill endangered gorilla, I think his name is, how do you say, Harambe? I think it's H-A-R-A-M-B-E, Harambe, I think. Was the decision to kill endangered gorilla Harambe justified? And then the final one says this, a vigil is planned at the Cincinnati Zoo on Memorial Day in tribute to the slain gorilla. Now, I think you can see in some of those articles and some of the titles there, you can see that the line is definitely being blurred between humans and animals, the way the things are marked there. Even this rare animal that is listed here, right? There seems to be, in some of these things that are said here, a certain type of glorifying of the gorilla that is taking place and exalting his nature pretty high and maybe even above that of the human beings. I saw Matt Walsh's article on this too. I don't remember the exact number that he listed, but he was talking about while people were mourning the death of this gorilla. Let's just keep it in perspective that there were, you know, thousands of babies that were killed that same day as well, and nobody seemed to blink an eye, right? They want to have vigils for this for the gorilla, but babies were slaughtered and wickedly slaughtered in abortion, and that doesn't whatsoever. But this the death of the gorilla mentioned here in our culture today. His article goes on. Then he says others I could link to, and what do they all have in common? That a boy's life and well-being should be weighed in the balance with the gorillas. The whole exercise suggests a moral equivalence between people and animals that is non-existent. So there's where he's pointing to. Now, of course, you know that the idea of moral equivalence here between those two is immediately dismissed in the scriptures when we understand something about what's referred to as the Imago Dei, right, or the image of God. This is what separates us from the animals. Man has the is made in the image of God, and animals are not. And so this is what gives man the value that he has as God's creation, and this image of God appears in us, but not even in fallen man. And it's noted that in fallen man as well, even though man is willfully and wickedly sinned against God and lost that original position he had with God in the garden, nevertheless, as marred and defigured as it is, he retains the Imago Dei. He retains the image of God. This is why murder is wrong. because murder is the taking of human life, and man was made in the image of God. And so he has an intrinsic value associated with him because of that image that is in him. Now, they some of the hyper-environmentalists and so forth are trying then to transfer that value to the animal kingdom. And it goes much further, you know, than that. It some to even plants and so forth. Now, with that, trying to transfer that, this is where we get this confusion in our culture today. Now, the article goes on then to say this. This is not to say that we're glad a gorilla had to die, nor is it defending negligence on the part of the zoo. How the boy got into this, his situation, is a separate moral question from what to do once he is in that situation. Once he's in that the enclosure, the only priority should have been to protect the boy at all costs. And I don't just mean the protection of his life. I mean the protection of his limb as well. It would be right to kill the gorilla, even if it was only to prevent the gorilla from roughing him up and traumatizing him. That's how precious human life is. And that used to be common sense. Well, he makes the point here again then that he brings in a couple of things, a couple of other items. One about, you know, we're not saying that, you know, to just kill animals indiscriminately is what we're advocating for. I'm not advocating for that as well. I've just started to hunt, and I hunt the things that I eat, you know, and or that others will eat after I hunt it. I don't just hunt or fish even, and just indiscriminately kill God's creation without any purpose or a plan behind it whatsoever. And that's not because I deem the animal to be the same moral equivalence as man. That's just out of good stewardship of the world that the Lord has given to us. And so I teach my grandchildren this when we go hunting or fishing. I teach them that, teaching one of my grandchildren to shoot a BB gun and so forth. Well, we're not just going to be picking off birds, you know, for no reason whatsoever. If I'm teaching him, if you shoot something, then you have an obligation to use it. If you're going to use it for, if you got a good purpose and using it, either eating it or some other purpose in it, if there's a reason to kill it, a good reason, then we've got a clear conscience to do so. But I'm not advocating for just the indiscriminate killing of animals or God's creation. I'm not for that whatsoever. And he adds here that he's not defending the negligence on the part of the zoo. You know, I thought it was interesting when I was looking at the commandment dealing with thou shalt not kill. There's a verse that I looked at in the Old Testament that talks about people making sure that they put railings up on their rooftop. You know, in ancient Israel, they used to spend a lot of time up on the roof. You remember that David, when he saw Bathsheba, you know, that she was on the bathing on the roof of the house, right? I mean, that it was just part. It was an extension of their living space. And there's a verse in the Old Testament that talks about the importance of putting a railing around that and how you would be held accountable if you didn't do so and someone then fell off and got hurt. And so you had a responsibility, yea, a moral responsibility, to take reasonable steps in order to assure that people were going to be safe in that environment. So here we see, I've looked at some of these exhibits as well, and, you know, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not saying that this is definitely the case, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of those things were not put in place again because they wanted the animal to see the habitat as natural as possible. It just wouldn't surprise me if some of those natural barriers are left off, because a lot of times we get the that type of consideration is brought into bear when they do these things. So obviously the space should have been safe, not only to keep the animal in, but to keep humans out, or those that could be put into danger. Especially, it couldn't have been much of a barrier if a little boy could get beyond what the barrier was there. We have these cases all the time where people that are mentally disturbed and they enter. One would just jumped into, I forget what it was. Was it a bear? A lion cage or something here just recently, obviously on drugs or some sort of mental illness or something, and jumped in. He was naked. Jumped in there naked into the lion's cage. So there's got to be steps made and taken in order to prevent these types of things from happening. And I would say, if you want to vent your anger somewhere at the death of this gorilla, there's the spot where the anger should be vented, vented, right? Should be, man, this thing should have been much more safe so that something like this wouldn't happen. He goes on then in the article to say they all seem to suggest that the boy's well-being and so forth. He says, nor are we defending negligence on the part of the zoo. How the boy got into this situation is a separate moral question than the one, and I think, we addressed that there adequately. Once in the enclosure, though, he says, the only priority should have been to protect the boy. Now, I would disagree with him a little bit on this. You know, I would, there may have been other steps that could have been taken initially before, you know, it seemed that the boy falls in, and then it's not like immediately that the gorilla is there. They should have obviously some sort of procedures in place where some sort of team can be pulled together quickly. They may have been able to do something else, you know, before the gorilla was able to get close to the boy, you know, some sort of tranquilizer or stun, like a stun gun type of thing or something to be able to make it so that he couldn't get near the boy or something along that line. I think that there could be something put into place along that line. But I agree with Denny that once there was any a chance that the gorilla, and we're talking about a 400 and what was it, 450? 450-pound gorilla. I mean, just one mistake, one violent act, and that's it. I mean, the boy is fragile in the hands of this gorilla. You don't get two chances here, right? There's no mulligan on this one. And so if you're going to err, you err on the side that the animal has to be killed in order to save the boy. And they did that. And they, somebody came, took the shot, and took the life of the gorilla. Denny introduces an interesting verse in order to point to this. He mentions this stuck out to me because, or jumped out to me, because we've been studying the book of Jonah. And he says this at the end of his article. He says, one of the vices of the Ninevites of old was that they didn't know the moral difference between people and animals. He quotes from Jonah chapter 3, and in Jonah chapter 3 and in verse 8. And in Jonah chapter 3 and verse 8, this is the New American Standard, but it says this. It says, but both man and beast must be covered with sackcloth, and let men call upon God earnestly, that each may turn from his wicked way and from the violence which is in his hand. So he extrapolates from that they did not have it between men and beasts, or men and animals, Nineveh. Now, I haven't heard that before. In fact, I put a quote out, or a tweet out with that statement on it, that statement, to see, you know, the rest of that statement had been deleted. The tweet was deleted. So I don't know if he's still standing by that, but he is pointing to it here. I would just say that we don't find in Jonah, we don't find the Lord specifically condemning them for that. In fact, at the end of the closing statement in the book of Jonah, we read there that it does speak about that in the city there was much cattle in the city. Now, I alluded to that in the preaching through Jonah and just pointed out how they were self-sufficient, so that within the walls of Nineveh, and the walls were massive, right? You could ride three chariots side by side up on the tops of the walls. And they had, what was it, 1,500, I think it was, towers that were put up around the city. So it was absolutely massive. And part of the defense of the city was that the fields and the cattle and were within the city. Now, what that meant was that you couldn't besiege the city. You know, that was a common tactic that they would use during those days. They would just surround the city and wait it out. And they had to come out eventually to get food and water and so forth. Well, this had a river going right through it. This city was self-sufficient. And so for this city to be overtaken by an enemy was extremely difficult. It's interesting because the Lord conquers them with an 8-word sermon. And so here is all these people, you know, millions of people living within the city, in this fortified city that no man could possibly conquer on his own. And yet here we see the Lord does this conquering of the hearts of the people of Nineveh with an 8-word sermon delivered by a wayward prophet, even Jonah. So it just speaks of the salvation is of the Lord. Amen. And that gives such great encouragement to us, because you have somebody difficult, you know, that you've been praying for, hoping that they would come to salvation, and you're wondering, oh man, they're such a difficult case. Could they ever really repent of their sins and come to the Lord? Well, the Lord saved a couple million people with an 8-word sermon that were inside a fortified city. So yes, the Lord can break through the walls of any hard heart and win people over unto himself. So then he goes on here to say it was a sign that as civilization, they did not know that human beings alone are created in God's image and as such have a superior value and a dignity over all of the other creatures. The Ninevites were pagans, and they did not retain the knowledge of God made mankind alone in his image. That comes from Genesis chapter 1 and verse 26 and 27. And this is an ominous sign of the times, that the error of pagan Nineveh has overtaken the American mainstream. Bottom line, despite the outrage, quote unquote, from animal rights supporters, the zoo did the right thing to protect the boy, and I'm glad they did. Well, I agree with them. I think they did do the right thing. And I think that it becomes a very good teaching moment for us to talk about the difference between men and animals. You know, I did an interview with Wesley Smith. If you want to hear more on this subject in a deeper level, the interview that I did with Wesley was on his book called A Rat is a Pig is a Dog is a Boy. Now, that was a famous quote from a hyper environmentalist, you know, but if you listen to what it's saying there, that a rat is a pig is a dog is a boy, he's saying that there's a moral equivalence between all of them. There's no difference between a rat or a pig or a dog or a boy. They're all exactly the same. If you're interested in his book, you can go out to Encounter Books. That's www.encounterbooks.com. And again, the author of that book was Wesley J. Smith. He says this, by the way, in the description of his book. It says, over the past 30 years, as Wesley J. Smith details in his latest book, the concept of animal rights has been seeping into the very bone marrow of Western culture. One reason is for this development is that the term animal rights is so often used very loosely to mean simply being nicer to animals. It used to mean that. But although animal rights groups do something, sometimes focus their activism on promoting animal welfare, the larger movement they represent is actually advancing a radical belief system. And he goes on then to talk about that radical belief system is this idea of glorifying these animals, oftentimes even above humans themselves. They're looked upon more highly. And so we can see that this is a great time to talk about these things with those around us. A lot of people will be around the water cooler, as it were, at work, you know, mentioning this story about killing the gorilla and so forth. This gives us an opportunity to talk about the scriptures and to talk about the inherent value that there is in human life, how the Lord Jesus Christ came himself, the Son of God. He took to himself human flesh in order to earn for us a salvation we could not earn for ourselves.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.